Morning.
How you doing?
Yeah, good. You?
Yeah, not too bad.
I'd like some rain, please.
Yeah, well, we've had a tiny bit. My garden's the green has come back a little bit, but otherwise it is dead, and it's quite depressing. After we had patio work done last year and some turf put down, and so blending it in and getting all the grass nice, and I've been seeding, and I was so proud of myself getting all this grass back. Then Leo gets a football goal for Christmas, and because it was a bit wet, sort of wet earlier in the year, and he just basically destroyed the grass. It was just mud. It was like a festival grass, you know. And except no drunk people lie around, but it's just like being in a festival. And apart from me, and so basically I reseeded, just seeding everywhere. So much bloody seed, it's growing all over the place, even on the patio. And I was quite pleased with myself. And then this stuff hits, and the sun hits, and it's all gone yellow. Dying on its ass. So,
mine's the same. It's gone completely yellow. But my gardener turned up yesterday to mow the lawn. I was like, "What the fuck are you doing? It's not grown. It's dead." I know you want your 10 quid, but
You can mow the lawn, but I'll pay you based on the size of the amount of grass you collect in the It comes preloaded. Ridiculous. Oh, look how much I got. Yeah, exactly. It's weird because the front, I guess, because the lack of rain. I mean, our front grass is actually pretty. Grow. Yeah, our front grass is pretty good. I mean, it's not that dead.
Is that because it's shaded? Like mine is too bad at the front.
Tiny bit.
Sun rises the other side of it, and so it doesn't get much sunlight on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
It rained for about 2 minutes yesterday. And I literally dropped what I was doing. I was like, rain! And ran outside and just stood in it. I was like, oh, so nice. And I tried to take a picture of it and then it had stopped. It's like, oh, that's what we're going to get for 2 more weeks.
Exactly. What is this strange wet stuff that's appeared outside?
Comes to something when you can't even get a bit of drizzle.
Exactly. Last 3 weeks I started a personal training thing to try and get myself into shape. So I've got this guy coming out every day at about 2 o'clock. And I do like an hour, it's an hour session, but there's sort of 35, 40 minutes of training. But it's being done outside. So,
not 2 o'clock. Yeah, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. So when it's been really hot, it has been, I've been at death's door. I mean, it's one of those things that you do, you're supposed to do it from 2 till 3 and then crack back on. I do it from 2 till 3, then die for about an hour, then try and recover in the next hour. Pretty much my afternoon's written off. It's got better. It has got better. I've lost a bit of weight, lost a few kilos, and I can. It's getting easier, the recovery process. But yeah, the first sort of week or so, I was dying on my ass. Horrific. So when it does rain, we actually did one session and it started raining, and I'm like, let's just keep going. This is good. I need this.
I can't do that. I mean, when it gets to 2 o'clock, I just shut all the windows, shut all the curtains, stick the aircon on, and just hope that it'll pass.
Well, that's the nice. Yeah, and I tend not to open my blinds at the moment in the office just because the sunlight comes. It sort of changes during the day, but it's quite nice when we're doing this because it's a little bit of soundproofing anyway. I've got the AC on. My Daikin unit has got like an eco mode, so it will power down. Well, not power down, but it will just, it will go into a reduced power mode if there's no. So I just leave it on all the time, and it just keeps the room nice and cool and uses very little electricity. I've got one of those smart meters. What everything's you quid a day in terms of the total house. The house is a day, and I've got an office out the back with all this crap on all the time. But it's so nice. I mean, you do one of these workouts, or you just come back or you're doing a barbecue or something outside, and I'll just go, I'll be back in a sec. Just open the office, close the door, stand there for a couple of minutes, come back out refreshed.
I need a little mini fridge full of beer as well. You just go in, strip off, sit under the aircon. Crack open a beer, just sit for 5 minutes. So nice. Yeah.
Where's Jason? Oh, let me just check the office. Open both doors with the family outside. What the hell are you doing? Just
getting chilling. Away from you.
Half naked, drinking a beer, sitting in a chilled office. Yeah,
sounds pretty good. I mean, that's why I'm a freelancer.
Well, exactly. That's the whole beauty
of
this.
Could do that shit in the afternoon.
That's the whole beauty of this thing, though. I mean, I had a client the other day that was like... it was quite funny. So we're building this project at the moment, and they wanted to meet up. And there's me involved. There's a guy I'm using involved. There's a designer at their end, and then a programmer at their end doing the back end. And it's like an app and a website. And he's like, "Yeah, can you come and see us in? Can you come and see us in Salisbury on Thursday?" I'm like, "No, I can't." got other commitments, which was family stuff plus this personal training thing. So he's like, "Okay, we'll come to you." So he comes out. They bring an iMac with them. Got an iMac keyboard. I said, you have brought a keyboard? And I was, yeah, it's in the bag. They brought everything out, just plugged it in, and then did everything we needed to do here. And it's like, yeah, that's what I like, you know. That's why I do this.
Yeah, and I also, don't let clients come to me, and I don't go to clients. It's like, you want to meet up? Tough shit. We can meet up.
Yeah, I don't mind coming here as long as it's a client. If it's a prospect, I qualify it first, because I've had those situations where they come in for half an hour. In the early days, they were in here for half an hour, and then you say, oh, this is the budget. Oh, no, I haven't got that much. So I do qualify it first. And some people, I had one guy turn up and just paid me, wanted to give me cash, you know, just like, I'll pay you for an hour, you know, of your time, just to discuss. It was a project he got done by someone else and was concerned about. Talked for an hour, and then he paid me. You know, don't mind that sort of stuff either. But,
like,
you know, my brother...
sort of escort.
But, exactly. But just to clarify, I did pay the VAT on that. It wasn't a cash. Wasn't a cash for no VAT.
I wouldn't.
Just in case the HMRC are listening. but yeah, I mean, like, well, this is a classic example. Like, yesterday, there was lots of stuff going on yesterday. Yeah, this week is like, for when you've got kids, it's like, you'll know this about this soon. You've got all the summer stuff and the kids' activities at schools and plays and things like that. And there's lots of ferrying of kids that has to take place. So I was helping with that yesterday and the day before. But my brother-in-law yesterday was stuck in London. You know, he wasn't able to attend this thing and do anything because he was stuck in London because of trains. And it's like that time I came and met you and Luke. You know, I very rarely go to London.
Yeah.
And that one time I came, it was a meetup in the evening, and we were going, I can't remember the restaurant we were going to for lunch. And I ended up being about 45 minutes late or an hour late or something. Because, you know, you're just sitting on this train for the first time in 6 months going to London, and the announcement comes on. There's a fire. There's a train on fire up ahead. It's like, great.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And we actually, at one point, he said, we're now going back to Basingstoke. And no one ever wants to go back to Basingstoke. Sorry if you're from... we're going back to Basingstoke, and then had to change to another train to go forward again. And it was like, oh my... That's why I hate it, and why it would probably just kill me now if I had to commute.
I just refuse. And I had a really good job come over, and they were like, oh, we see that you're 100% remote. That won't work for us. We need you to come in at least twice a week. And it's like, no chance.
Yeah.
No chance.
I never understand this whole thing. It's like what I was saying yesterday about my brother-in-law, you know, that he's having to work at this on-site, at this client's location. I never understood this concept of, well, I sort of understand it because I know what the root cause is. It's all about trust, really, because it's nothing to do with communication or anything else. Because when you go, you know, when you work, I don't know what your previous job was, whether you did developing, you know, in an actual office for people. But when I worked for people where you're in an office, your development team are all sitting there with headphones on. You know, they sit there with headphones on, listening to music or listening to whatever they're listening to, locked in, you know, and they're talking over Slack. Or at the time, when the company I was at, it was, what was it, Campfire. So everyone's chatting in Campfire. You're literally sitting opposite the person and they're talking on Campfire, or they're messaging you with Skype or Google Chat or whatever. You can look at their face and they're typing. You know, they're 4 feet from you. And sometimes you'd end up just taking the headphones off and talking to them because that would make sense because you're sitting opposite each other. But that's the sort of way people work in offices. So the whole remote thing just purely comes down, for me, I think it just comes down to trust. It's clients, they want you on site because they want to see that you're actually working. Even though when you're on site, they're not going to be sitting there watching you 24. It's just such an old, antiquated system. And you know, I'm working for clients in this. You've worked for clients in abroad, I guess. And I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got three
clients. Most of my clients are in America.
Yeah, I've got three clients in the States at the moment. It's like they're choosing to work remotely with me rather than get someone local that they could just pull in off the street and bring into their office. So it can be done. You know, it can.
It's very strange. I mean, this is going to segue nicely into your most recent purchase, I'm sure. But I said to this client that was like, oh, well, why can't you come to our offices? I was like, well, A, I live an hour and a half, 2 hours away. So I'd have to drive 40 minutes to the nearest train station that goes to London and then be on a train for an hour. I'd have to be there 20 minutes early so I don't miss it. It's going to cost a lot of money in tickets because I'm not travelling in standard class if I'm coming back and down and charging you for it. So it'll be first class. And when I get there, I'm going to be tired, pissed off because I've had to get up early, go through all this traffic and stuff. And then I'm going to be working on a tiny little laptop, whereas usually I have, you know, an 8-core Mac Pro, ultra-wide 32-inch monitor, and a 4K 27-inch monitor next to it, and a full-size keyboard and all that stuff. And you're expecting me to come in, be productive after a load of travelling that I don't want to do, being pissed off with you because I don't want to be there, and then having to work on a machine that is inferior to my usual setup.
Like, exactly.
All because you want me to be in your office on the off chance I need to discuss something with your designer that could be done on Slack or Skype or any other myriad of options. You don't actually need, just want me there for whatever reason. Yeah. So, no. But if you, if you change your mind on that, I'm available. Here's the price.
Yeah, it just, and the other thing with the traveling, which is key to what you just said, you know, you just mentioned it, that you can't, it's like, I live near Andover. Andover's, 10-minute drive. I can get to the station in 10 minutes. But unless I'm timing things perfectly, because you can argue, well, it's only, you know, hour and 10 minutes from Andover to Waterloo. Yeah, but that works on the basis that I get in the car, I get to Andover, there's a parking spot instantly I can get to, I can get straight to the ticket machine and get a ticket, or literally step onto the train. You know, there's time in between. You know, you'll leave a bit early or you'll miss the train. And so, and on the way back as well, you know, you could easily get to Waterloo Station and it might be 20 minutes or 30 minutes till the next train because you've just missed the last one. Just because of, you know, you can't be monitoring time all the time. And so you end up, it ends up probably for me taking about two to two and a half hours door to door. And that's, you know, 5 hours of traveling. And that the last time I did it was when I had to go in for a meeting for a client who it was supposed to be remote. It's a big holiday brand and they had an app for checking on your holiday, and I was going to be part of a team, so but it was going to be remote work. That was what, a couple of years ago. And so they, we want a kickoff meeting. So great, okay, so I'll agree to this kickoff meeting and it's chargeable time. But I ended up traveling 5 hours in. The meeting was literally half an hour 45 minutes, and it was like, we're done, that's it, you know. It's like, you're kidding me. And you know what it's like afterwards. You know, when you've train journeys, you can try and be productive. You know, you can think, oh, I'm going to do some email. And you sort of get your hotspot out and dick around for 20 minutes trying to get the hotspot working or trying to connect to the train Wi-Fi or whatever. And it just ends up being not very productive. You get very little done. And then usually in the afternoon on the way back, I'm actually, for some reason, it's like when you're in a car driving a long distance and you're a passenger and you sort of nod off. On a train, I will nod off. I will just feel, I just feel really tired.
You have famously many a time slept through your stop, haven't you?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I did that. Yeah. And then a very expensive taxi ride to go back to the station where I left my car. Yeah, ridiculous. But yeah, so I just get naturally very tired. So it literally wipes a day out. You know, it is a complete day has gone. So now I say to people, if you want me to come in for a London meeting, then I basically bill for the time. I did it recently for a new big client, a new building firm that have got some apps they need help with, existing app. Lots of stuff they want to do. The guy's quite cool. He's got lots of ideas. He was actually, as a side note, a few years ago, because he came up with this litter reporting app. And I think he called it Litter. It was Littergram. Yeah, Littergram. And he got, if you look it up on Google, he got like letters from Facebook after they bought Instagram wanting a decent assist using the word gram. But he basically went all over the news and stuff, and eventually they rescinded whatever. But anyway, side note. They wanted me to go to, I think it was Essex, near Essex to their headquarters, to sort of see their setup, because they've got quite a cool setup. And, you know, just go through the project and everything. And I was like, well, you know, I'll need to charge you for traveling. And he's like, fine, no worries. You know, just we'll do a purchase order for your travel time and your time here. And he ended up paying me a day's work. And I was there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
That's not bad.
And that's the clients you want. You know, this is the sort of client who's like, you tell him your day rate or your hourly rate. And he's like, yes, fine. You know, because he's not going to, you know, piss around. He wants you. He researched into me, found my details, found me on Twitter, found all this stuff and was like, right, you know.
And he still wanted you.
I know. I was amazed. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure you didn't go? Well, sure.
Have you contacted Ben?
Yeah. It's when he started saying, so we really want to work with you, Ben. Ah, hold on. Yeah. What's it like?
I always love it when I get the emails that say, dear Jason or dear Luke. It's like, ah, I see what email they're
Oh, I love those. I just love the ones where people still send them saying, you know, hi and CC everybody in, and you're in there, Luke's in there. It's like, yeah. Basically, it's like that scene from The Usual Suspects, and we're all lined up, and it's the same people over and over again. It is quite funny.
I've got a good client at the moment where the only one that I've done any remote work for in the last 2, maybe 3 years, because he's basically hired a agency to build an app for him. And so I am an advisor, and I basically tell him when they're not doing things correctly. Or it's the perfect job for me, really, because I get to just sit and say, well, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, but I'd have to fix it. So
yeah,
I enjoy it.
You get to be arsy and get paid for it.
Yep, which is fits right in my wheelhouse. So I trek up to the meetings probably once a month or so. And it's a, like, you know, 3-hour drive away, so 6 hours there and back, and then there'll be a good 6 hours long of meetings. With you.
Wow.
It's quite draining, but it's good. And it's like, well, I get paid, you know, for the, you know, day and a half or whatever for doing that. And it's fine. I don't mind doing it because it doesn't, I'm not working on a laptop. I'm not coding. I think that's the difference. I can't go to someone's office and then be expected to just sit and start coding because you have times that you're better at doing certain work.
Yeah, exactly.
Work.
I hate that.
You don't want distractions. Like, if I'm going to an office, I'll stick some noise-cancelling headphones on and ignore anyone that tries to bother me. So there's no point in me being there. But if it's to talk about stuff and just to go in and be like, well, you should do this, you should try that, maybe do that, then I'm quite happy going wherever because it's, you know, it's just getting paid to talk, which is great.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I hate if I ever have to go somewhere and code. Because like you say, sometimes you're not in the mood, you know, not the right headspace or environment or your kit, you know. I'll code on my laptop when I'm away from the desk if I've taken it inside in the evening or something. Although recently I haven't been doing that. I've just been leaving it set up and using an iPad or my phone just to do that's not code-wise. It's not. I don't think I could sit. I couldn't sit for longer than an evening's fine, but I couldn't sit longer than a few hours on a tiny little, you know, what effectively is, even if it's 12 inches, still.
I do a little bit of coding on a laptop in bed sometimes, but usually just on my own projects. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm messing around
exactly.
with ARKit 2 or something. And I always install like the Xcode betas on my laptop because if it screws something up, it really doesn't matter because I use my laptop so infrequently. But my Mac Pro is like, nothing gets installed on that until it's stable and tested, so that won't get updated to the latest thing. But laptop's fine, and I'll just sit and do a bit of coding on it, but I couldn't work on it anymore. But I think that's going to segue us nicely into your purchase.
Yes, new MacBook Pro 13-inch, which arrived sooner than I thought, actually. I mean, I ordered it, when did they, I think, was it Thursday or Wednesday or something they announced?
Thursday, I think.
Yeah, which came out of the blue. It was just, I just suddenly saw something on Twitter from iMore or something saying, you know, what's new about the what's updated in the new MacBook Pros, and I'm like, what? Looked it up. I was really, really hoping that it was going to be 32 gig in the 13-inch. Even though I've never missed, you know, I've never really had an issue, unlike with Windows in the past, where, you know, if you ran out of memory in Windows, you bloody knew it. Especially if you had an old non-SSD, you know, you could hear it paging to the disk. I've never really suffered on macOS running out of memory or anything, it's just nice to have as much memory as you can, you know, for caching or whatever, and especially if you're running any but unfortunately the 15 inch is the only one with 32 gig because it's using desktop RAM, and so they've had to, because of the processor and because of the RAM, they've had to beef up the battery, make a bit more space somehow to make the battery bigger. Although there is a news thing going around at the moment that the 15 inch has got a massive thermal throttling issue. Someone put one in a freezer.
It'll be nothing.
Exactly. Well, I mean, just covering that quickly. From what I've seen of it, it's a bit like the iOS issue, you know, with the throttling with iOS, where it was like, oh my god, they're throttling your processor, and they're slowing down iOS, and they're not telling you, they're slowing down your phones and forcing you to buy new phones. When you actually delved into it, you realized that there were certain situations at certain points during a day when you were doing something that was very intensive that it may throttle it to get through that thing, you know, so that the battery wouldn't. And so it wasn't throttling it all the time. And from what I've read so far, and I could be wrong, but from what I've read of just skimming through some of these articles, these people are not doing normal productive stuff where they're using, I don't know, Final Cut Pro, or they're rendering 4K video, or they're doing, you know, whatever. They're just running these benchmarks that are bloody, you know, they're hitting the machine
as hard as possible.
Exactly. Designed to just completely destroy that CPU by doing something, you know, making it turbo boost constantly, which is just ridiculous because that's not how these things work. You know, I'm sitting here now doing this. There's nothing really, well, there's a few windows open, but my machine's not really doing much. I think my CPU monitor's got like one bar at the very bottom. So my CPU is probably clocked right down. It's probably doing very little, certainly not into turbo boost mode. But if I'm rendering a 4K video in the background constantly, or doing some 3D render that, you know, just pushes it, obviously it's going to start heating up. So, you know, these guys...
And also worth pointing out that nearly everywhere in the world at the moment is massively hotter than usual.
Exactly.
So, so what, Like what you're comparing to maybe this time last year or some different benchmark you did on your device 2 months ago is going to be very different today, because like as soon as I get my laptop out at the moment and start using it for a bit, it starts, the fans kick in, which they never used, and it's just because it's so hot, like it's 30 degrees in my room.
Yeah.
So it's just hot.
So it's one of these typical situations where if someone had said, okay, I've got this machine, I've been using it for a month, I'm a pro photographer, filmmaker, I've been rendering 4K video, I've been doing this, I've been doing that, and I'm seeing massive slowdowns suddenly, and it's just not, you know, it's halfway through rendering my 4K video, it's not, the whole thing slows down, it takes much longer to do the last half and all this sort of crap, then you could sort of understand it. But I don't think that's the case. I think what's going to happen is if people actually use it in normal use, they will find that it's absolutely fine.
You're going to want that throttling, because the point of it is the same, like iPhones shut down if they get too hot and they have a little thing saying cool it down. Because if it didn't, then shit starts melting inside and then you do get into serious problems. So I'm pretty sure I'm correct in saying that every laptop has some form of throttling.
Yeah.
Like that's just how they work. They're small, compact, very hot components, so they have to vent the heat somehow.
Yeah.
And unless you've got something like one of those Alienware massive gaming laptops that's got physical huge fans in it, the only way you're going to do that is by throttling the amount of CPU you've got. So, I mean, the original, the 12-inch MacBook has to do this because it has no fans.
Yeah.
It's completely stateless, like an iPad. So the same as an iPhone or iPad, it's going to dial the thing down if it's getting too hot. And if you're doing these benchmarks, it's going to get hot.
Exactly. And I think
this makes sense.
So we're getting that typical situation where, you know, the sort of fear and doubt, fear mongering, whatever articles come out, you get the typical people go, oh, you know, I knew I shouldn't have bought one, or I knew their new design wasn't correct, and you get the usual suspects who
haven't they changed the keyboard?
I know, exactly. The usual suspects that complain about keyboards and everything else constantly now going, oh my God, this sounds like a real design flaw. You know, this guy's having to put his MacBook Pro in a freezer and run the test to get the clock rate up. And it's like, this is just ridiculous. You know, this is just ridiculous. Just bear in mind that these people write articles on sites that look for clicks, for advertising. That's what they want. It's all bullshit. And anyway, it's a load of it's just the usual shit that comes out.
I love your veiled tweets. they've become quite good at late of specifically targeting one person, but just in the most vague about terms that you can come up with. Take advice from someone that builds a standing desk out of Coke cans.
I know. I mean,
that's my favorite one so far.
I know. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. When you've got somebody who basically makes one app, manages one app for a living and is financially independent and doesn't have to actually earn any money, telling, you know, everyone else what they should be doing and how they should be working and how they should be built, when one of their finest achievements was creating a stand-up desk out of Coke cans. Yeah, beyond me. But anyway, the 13-inch is...
Says the man with a TARDIS, Lou.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. the infamous TARDIS, Lou.
That's whatever I say to people. I'm like, oh, don't listen to that guy. Ugh. Yeah. Never trust the word of a man with a TARDIS, Lou.
Exactly. never trust a man who's doing a TARDIS. Anyway. So I ordered one. I've been waiting for... some sort of processor upgrade or something, and the 32 gig would have been great, but being my usual self, I thought, yeah, get the tax down, I'll buy one. So I ordered one on Thursday. Didn't want the 15 inch because, well, I mean, not because of any thermal throttling issue. I don't think I would have regretted it for that anyway, but just because I'm used to the 13 inch size, I've got like sleeves and bags and everything that fits. It's just a nice size, and for some reason, which I know sounds really ridiculous and petty, but I just get freaked out by that little tiny keyboard in that huge space on the 15-inch. I just don't like the sort of white space around the keyboard. I just, it feels like if you're going to make a 15-inch laptop...
do you remember the 17-inch one?
I know, exactly. So the 15,
T-tray.
Yeah, now the 15-inch has got better, though. I mean, I was quite shocked with this new design when I bought my first 13-inch new design and then looked in a store and compared it to a 15-inch. And it was like, oh, wow, the 15-inch is actually only a little bit bigger. But it's just when you open it and see that space, well, they should have made the keyboard bigger or something. But anyway, I wanted to go for the 13-inch, even though, you know, it's got the four cores, which is nice. And you do notice it. I mean, there's a lot of nice improvements. I mean, the SSD...
One of the things I don't understand, who needs 32 gigs of RAM in a laptop?
Well, like,
most of the things that you do on a Mac are designed in such a way that RAM is freed up and stuff is fairly intelligent. I've got I mean, I've got 32 gigs in my Mac Pro, just cause, but I never use anywhere near that amount.
Yeah,
like, even exactly. when doing like massive Xcode projects. Even when I've used Final Cut Pro, that is more CPU bound than RAM bound.
Yeah.
I've never hit any problem or limit. And I used to use a 4 gig MacBook Air, and that ran Xcode fine. I've got an 8 gig RAM in my laptop, runs Xcode absolutely fine. Big projects.
Yeah, Mac OS is much better.
So I don't understand these people that are like, oh, I need 32 gigs of RAM in my laptop. You don't. Like, if you need 32 gigs of RAM in your laptop, you probably don't need a laptop. You need something more powerful. Yeah, I don't understand people that have a 32 gig, that they want this amazingly powerful laptop that they're just going to plug into an external monitor just for the off chance they might need to use it out and about somewhere.
Mm.
It's like, you could probably buy a cheaper, less powerful laptop and buy a mid-range desktop PC for the same amount of money that it would cost to buy a souped-up laptop, and then you'd have that flexibility. And with stuff like iCloud syncing and that now, it's, you know, trivial. I used to have that set up. I had a Mac Mini at home and a laptop that I used for out and about. I had an iMac originally and a laptop. And I used to have to do, like, syncing with Dropbox and stuff to sync all my files back and forth. And it was a pain in the ass. But now you've got PowerNap. Everything just syncs in the background. Like, as soon as I go to my laptop, all my files are already there.
Mm.
I don't have to worry about it. And so I don't understand this mentality of having a super powerful, ridiculously over-the-top laptop and then just plugging it into a monitor using a keyboard with it. Just buy an iMac or a Mac Pro or a Windows PC or something else.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the priority's always been processor and drive and then RAM. I think from the old PC days, it was always nice having more RAM because Windows was so shit and it would cache a lot if you had... But Mac
OS, I think
a
lot of it is also the fact that you can't upgrade the RAM. So it's you get the most that you can put in because you can't change it later in the MacBooks at least. So I understand that mentality, but like 32 gigs is just unnecessary. It's completely unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, if it had an option where they said you could have 32 gig, but it's going to use this desktop RAM and reduce your battery life, I won't bother then because I don't want to compromise battery life. But I mean, this thing is... At the moment, you know, I've never hit, like you say, I've never hit the limit of 32. You know, is a nice thing to have in terms of a number, having as much as you can. But I've never hit a limit with 16. I've never had the machine slow down to the point where it's like, you know, paging or whatever. I've got like a little memory thing at the top of the screen which tells me how much I've got left, and you know, it's never been in trouble. But this new machine has benefited greatly from four cores because of before it was a two cores that had the hyper threading. So this has now got four proper cores. I think the 15-inch has got six cores, gone up to six. It was four before. And the SSD is ridiculously fast. It's something like 2.6 gig. I was getting to something like 2.6 gig write and 2.5 gig read or something like that. But, you know, these benchmarks, you know, you run it once, you run it again, it varies. But it's much, much faster than the previous machine. And it's really noticeable. I mean, I didn't think I'd... I thought it would be one of those things where because I've done a time machine restore and a migration, it's going to have the same old crap and it's not going to notice. But you just... it. Opening apps, you know, flicking between stuff, going through Finder, whatever, especially disk space is super fast.
I've said it for years, but the best improvement you can make to any computer is to improve the SSD.
Definitely.
Especially if you don't have an SSD in it.
Definitely.
It makes such a difference to everything. I mean, I've got an Xbox One X, which has a much faster spinning hard drive than the previous models and much better, but it's still a spinning hard drive. And a USB 3 SSD plugged into it is actually faster than the internal drive, like noticeably so. Like some games load five times quicker. And those kinds of gains that you'll get on desktop if you switch from even a Fusion drive to a solid SSD or upgrading to just better SSDs. It's the same with like memory cards like in the Switch. If you've got a Class 5 SD card and you put a Class 10 in there, then suddenly everything's a lot quicker. So, I mean, that makes so much more difference than RAM.
Oh, definitely,
if you said to me, do you want the old SSD? Sorry, the old SSD and 32 gigs, I'd say, give me 8 gigs of RAM and give me an even faster SSD.
Yeah, exactly.
The SSD is far more important than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing they've improved is the keyboard. So the keyboard from the... I think I got the 20... I did buy the 2016 one, which had the butterfly keyboard, which was very noticeably noisy. I mean, it was very clackety. And I had a problem with the tab key, so I did suffer from the sort of keyboard issues. But I ended up getting this 2017 model and sold the 2017 had a slightly better key, just a little bit. It just felt a little bit different, and they changed some of the markings on it to add some markings back that were missing from the previous one. But this one is noticeably different in terms of when you type on it, it is much quieter, much, much quieter. Mm. and just feels a little bit nicer. And I've still got the other laptop because for the first time, my wife now is going to have a Mac because she's still been rocking an old Vio, Sony Vio Windows machine. She uses it when
grounds for divorce,
when,
right there.
Oh, I mean, she barely uses it, but it's for certain scanning and things she does that requires Windows, and it's got lots of legacy stuff on it. So she'll fire it up now and again to write a letter or something. But it is when she fires it up, you know, this room is usually pretty quiet even with air conditioning. When she opens the lid on that Vio, it just is. It's a whole new level of noise. You know, you just the fans start kicking in instantly. So I've, you know, cleaned up the old MacBook, wiped it and everything, and it's now sort of sitting on her desk ready for her to set it up so she can get all that and join the Mac Brigade. Because I've still got it, you can sort of compare the keys, and it is, yeah, it's very, very noticeably different. But other than that, yeah, I'm really happy with it. I mean, I use Time Machine, so I've got two T5 Samsung SSDs that do alternate Time Machine backups, and then I've got Backblaze remote backup. So the restore process was pretty straightforward. I did have a couple of glitches, which were really, really odd. So basically, I fired up the machine and did a migration assistant. You know, as you go through all the setup when it first starts up in your language and everything. Do you want to migrate from another? Yes, plugged in the SSD directly. And then it did this weird thing. So plugged in the SSD and it comes up with the drive symbol. And my Time Machine drives are encrypted. I don't know if it's anything to do with it. So it comes up first, then it asks for the password to get the, you know, to access the unencrypted volume. And then the sort of proper icon appeared for the Time Machine drive. Then I clicked it and hit next. And then what I was expecting, which is what should happen, is it should give you, you know, the Time Machine backups, which one you want to restore. And it just sort of went straight into the next screen, which said, okay, we're ready to migrate the following settings. Now, looking back, I realized that, well, I know it was wrong, but I should have noticed it was wrong, but the last upgrade I did was last year, so I just forgot, was that when you do a normal upgrade like that and you go through that mode of picking the Time Machine backup, which was the one from about 10 minutes earlier, when you hit next, it usually then gives you a much longer list of things that it's going to migrate. It's going to migrate apps and docs, and it has your usernames, and it has your little icons for your avatars. And so it's much more obvious that it's migrating your stuff. When I did it this time with this process, it didn't ask me for the date and to select the date and time. And it just came up with, you know, we're going to migrate apps and docs and things like that. And it had the little spinny things next to it while it was calculating the size. And I just hit next. And then it took like 5 minutes and said the migration's complete. And I'm like, okay, now I know APFS has some improvements on certain things, but I can't believe it's just migrated that in sort of 5 or 10 minutes. So restarted the machine and everything, and it was all a load of crap. Nothing had really worked properly. So I went through, wiped it, you know, reinstalled macOS again, which didn't take long, 10, 15 minutes. Went back through the process again. And again, it did the same thing. It showed me this screen. So then I hit back, did it again, and then it showed me the Time Machine backups, which was just bizarre. So then when I picked the correct backup and then hit next, then it gave me the proper screen with all the settings, all the my name, my other accounts on there, proper values of sizing it to each one. And then I did migrate and it all went fine. It took about 2 hours, 2.5 hours to do almost a terabyte, about 700 gig. Because, you know, fast SSD in the machine, external USB-C SSD, it was super fast. So after that, it was fine. So I'll remember next time. I mean, when I do it next time, I'll take some screenshots and see if it does it again. Because it was a very weird bug. But once it did it was done. And the only other issue I had was I've got a Parallels VM that I exclude from Time Machine because you obviously don't want it to do that whole backup each time. So I just had to copy that across manually. But otherwise, it was as smooth as anything. But it's I still get that thing where after I've done a Time Machine restore like that and I've copied over that Parallels disk, which is usually the only one that I have to worry about, I still fire up apps like Beyond Compare and try and compare the drives because I still panic. I still have that doubt that it can't have brought all my SSH stuff across. It can't have brought all my keychain stuff across. It can't have, you know, the key stores for Android because I do Android stuff. It can't have brought all that stuff across because it can't be that simple. Do you know what I mean? And then I do like a Beyond Compare and realize actually it is that simple because that's what Time Machine is. It's so slick and simple to use.
I don't trust it at all. Whenever I get a new machine, I do a fresh install. And because nearly all of my important files are stored in iCloud, I get those automatically with the documents and desktop sync. So all of that stuff comes in automatically. I reinstall some apps. I usually have to do a few weird terminal bits, like I use Jekyll for my blog and a few other weird NPM files to get that installed. But then that's it. I don't actually really have that much that I need to worry about. It's all just files. So I do a fresh install each time. I do use Time Machine, though. If my Mac Pro just suddenly died today,
yeah,
and I was in the middle of an urgent project, I could carry on my laptop feasibly. But what I would probably do is just go to the Apple Store, replace, take a new one, bring it in, and I would just do a Time Machine backup to that. And the reason I say that is because it's the exact same hardware. Like, it's the exact same machine, so in theory, everything should be fine. When I don't trust it is if I'm putting it on a different machine. Like, if I've migrated from an iMac to a Mac Pro, fundamentally, it should be the same. It should all be, you know, work absolutely fine. But I'm very cognizant, back in the day when you use Linux or something, when you installed it, it was customized pretty much to the hardware that you had, like the drivers being installed are for the drivers you have. And I use Clean My Mac, which removes a load of unnecessary files that you don't need. So, like localizations that I don't use from apps and things like that. And so I'm always wary of going over to different hardware, because even like something like the drivers being different could add some weird glitch to a preference that I've put in Final Cut that was the default on that laptop is not going to be the default on the Mac Pro, because it's got more cores to do something better. So I tend to just reinstall everything from scratch. It doesn't really take me that long. I can probably do the whole thing in about 2 hours. I think I had a lot of practice back in the Windows 95, 98 days, because I used to partition my hard drive. I had like a big, big at the time, it was probably like 200 megs or so. Partition that drive. And I'd have a C drive, which is where all my apps and that were. A D drive for downloads, a G drive for games, an M drive for music, drive for photos. So I had loads of these drives. and then what I would do is every month without fail, I'd wipe the Z drive completely. I'd reinstall Windows, reinstall all the applications just to keep it running fast. But all of my media and all my actual files were kept separate. And in essence, that's the same thing I do today. All of my files are just in the Documents folder, which is synced in iCloud. And then everything else can just be reinstalled. And most of it has iCloud sync anyway. So if I install things, then that has its own sync. Obviously, when you install stuff like Tweetbot, it has all of your tweets and syncs everything. And also things like the keychain as well. Like you mentioned, the keychain being backed up. You've got iCloud keychain now as well. So even that used to be the worst thing about migrating over, is that I'd need all new development keys and all that kind of stuff. Well, that will get synced across now as well. So that's relatively straightforward. I do it that way. But I would use Time Machine if I was going to the same hardware. And I needed to do it now.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Really quick.
Yeah, I mean, I did try and do a Time Machine restore from the recovery, you know, menu, recovery boot, but it says, you know, you can have a different model. So it's like, fine, so I did migration. I mean, at some point, I've been doing restore for ages, a migration for ages. At some point when I've got time, and if I buy another one, or even with this one, you know, I might do a fresh install just to get everything clean. But It reminds me of the Windows days where I used to go through that trauma of, I say trauma, you know, the trauma of buying new hardware, you know, a first world problem. But, you know, when we used to buy new machines, it was literally, right, I bought a new machine, tomorrow I'm writing off the whole day setting this machine up. And it would literally be an 8-hour process of getting rid of all the shit that was pre-installed, like all the Norton crap or whatever. Then installing, you know, I'd have to install Visual Studio, I'd have to install SQL Server, I'd have to install Office, I'd have to copy my files across from somewhere because there wasn't like the concept of Dropbox and stuff. It was just, and then start trying to build some web apps that I was working on in .NET or whatever, and then finding out I'd missed out a certain component. And it would literally be, you know, 8-hour process to get everything back up and running again, and then everything would be fine. And that was, and then there's that whole concept of there is no real backup system in Windows. You know, we ended up having one of those bloody servers in the office with tape drives that was trying to back up everybody's machines was doing a backup file to a remote network, and then that was being backed up to tape. It was just bloody horrific.
I was going
to
say it'd be tape stream.
Yeah, it was just horrific. And then we had a safe, and you had to put it, you know, take one off site and put one in the safe, and it's like, oh my God. And that's the thing I love now. I mean, I remember years ago, the last DVD-based MacBook before they went slimmer, and it was when my dad was alive and he was going through the cancer, and we had to go and get a C-scan. And so we were sitting in this waiting area, and I had my, excuse me, I had my laptop with me, And I was just doing a couple of bits while we were sitting there waiting. And I think he'd gone in. And my machine just died. The MacBook literally just it froze, like mid doing something. And I was like, oh, okay. Restarted it, and it was dead. And I was like, holy shit. You know, my mum's like thinking, is it the stuff that, you know, is it the machinery here or something? I'm worried. This is when I was a child.
that was my first thought.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, when I was a child, she used to shout up to me, are you using your computer because the dishwasher's not working? It's like, mum, it doesn't work like that. So it just reminded me of that whole childhood. But anyway, long story short, when I got home, I discovered what I did was I thought, okay, this is screwed. I had a backup SSD because I thought the SSD was screwed. It was an old Crucial one because this was one of those machines you could open and upgrade. So I'd opened it and I'd replaced the hard drive with an SSD. So I figured the SSD was dead. I couldn't read from it. When I plugged it into an external thing, you know, nothing would read from it. So I had a backup one. So I used the backup one, did a time machine restore, got everything back where it was because it was only backed up from earlier that morning before I'd left the house. Anyway, long story short, it turned out this was a fault of the SSD. It was a Crucial bug with their firmware, which I found out about later, and I managed to fix it and get the drive operational again with all my data because I hadn't wiped it because I just left it. But basically, there was a bug in the firmware where the release note said something like, with the new firmware update, said, fixes an issue where the drive would stop working after so and so many hours. So it was like something like the int bug that people fall into with SQL Server naming of fields and things where they, you know, hit a limit at 65,000 or whatever. It was something like that. It was a weird number. And basically, if you hit that number of hours usage, the machine, the drive just stopped working. And that's what happened. So as I was sitting there, by some miraculously weird fluke, I'd hit that exact number of usage and the drive just stopped. And that was it. So months later, when I found this out and there was an update, I just plugged this drive in, did the firmware update to it, and all of a sudden I could plug it in and there was all my stuff, all back to normal. Everything was still there. Just the drive just stops. So that's when Time Machine was awesome, because my mum was quite panicking and, oh my God, how are you going to work? What's going on? What's this? It's like, it's fine. Don't worry. I've got, you know, before I left the house this morning, my last backup was, sort of, you know, 8 o'clock or 5 in the morning. I've done very little since because we've been traveling here and stuff. I just went home, put the other drive in, did a restore, done. I do love
See, I used to have external Thunderbolt drive. Which was like 6 terabytes, and it's where I put all of my data, so films, movies, all that kind of stuff. So had a fair amount of space on them. Like I'd used about 4 gigs of it. And with Backblaze, you get unlimited upload, well, unlimited backup of not only your computer but all the drives that are plugged into it.
That's awesome.
So it uploaded all of that 4 terabytes, and it was using Striped RAID, which is why it was so big. And one of those drives died, and so the whole thing just died completely. And I didn't need anything on it urgently, but I couldn't download all of that information from Backblaze because they zip it all and let you download it. So, like, there's a limit. So I couldn't say, I want all of these files, please, this 4 terabytes as a zip. It's like, no, you can't do that. But instead, you could pay, I think it was $99. No, it was $170. And they put all of the files onto a 4 terabyte hard drive and then shipped it to me. And like 3 days later, this new hard drive appeared with it. Now they do it for $99. And if you send the drive back, you get your money back. Which is crazy.
It's very cool.
Absolutely crazy.
Backblaze is amazing because it's one of those sort of services that you think, because I used CrashPlan before, and CrashPlan is now defunct. You have to use But CrashPlan was one of those ones that ran periodically. And so your machine would suddenly die on its ass. And you're thinking, what is going on? You know, and it would run on battery power, which used to drive me nuts, even though I turned that option off. You know, the service would be sitting there checking for file changes. And you're like, what is this doing? So that was one of these things that you had to sort of run in the early hours. And if you hadn't left your machine on, it would then send you emails saying you hadn't backed up. Backblaze is one of these ones that does it in real time. And so you think, well, actually, that's just to be the worst thing ever. But it's just like iCloud. You know, it syncs it in the background. It uses very low priority process, and I've never really had an issue or noticed anything wrong with it.
My
machine's never slowed down. Exactly. And you know, it still amazes me today with all of this stuff. Even if you don't use Time Machine and you use something like Backblaze, which you could argue in some ways is better because Time Machine is typically time machining it to a machine to a drive on your desk, which, you know, if your place burns down, you're screwed. So
unless you've got a port upstream, in which case it's no good. Like, obviously, that 4 terabytes of data took me a long time to upload.
Exactly. But it still amazes me when I see posts by people in my community, in the development community I'm in, and in on Twitter or whatever, you know, who go on about, oh, you know, I've just my drive's corrupt, I've lost a load of stuff. Does anyone know how to get data off a Mac drive? And you're thinking, okay, there could be a situation where the last Time Machine backup you did was an hour ago, and you just happen to have done the most amazing amount of work in an hour, which won't necessarily be backed up. But if you had Backblaze, it would be. But I can't. Yeah. I just can't imagine. I just don't understand when Time Machine is free and you can just use an old hard drive or buy a cheap 2 terabyte hard drive or whatever you want to use, and Backblaze is what $5 a month or £5 a month per machine for unlimited.
Yeah.
Or iCloud. You know, iCloud.
iCloud
desktop and documents. It's, you know,
yeah.
With all of these things being thrown at you, I still don't understand in this day and age, especially when they're using Macs or Apple devices, why people lose data and they lose photos and they lose things. Because yes, yeah. You know, iCloud storage is, well, it's not expensive. It's not expensive at all. You know,
it's not expensive. It's just a lot more than other people charge.
Yeah, true.
Because people charge a ridiculous low amount.
Yeah, I mean, you see people complaining about, oh, you know, I bought an iPhone, I should get much more backup storage. I mean, you're talking about a few quid a month to get 2 terabytes of storage to store all your data. You know,
yeah.
Set up iCloud backup. There should never be a situation. I feel much safer now, you know, upgrading my phone to iOS 12 or doing any of this stuff, thinking, just like you said, if the worst possible thing happened today and this machine dies, well, A, I've got my wife's machine, which she hasn't set up yet, so I'll just take that back. Or B, I drive down to the Apple store, I get another machine, even if it's for temporary, you know, for 14 days and I return it or whatever while I get mine repaired. I just go down there, I restore. I've probably lost a day's work, a day's time, but I'm back up and running again. And this is what I don't understand is if you talk about the freelance and the business side of things, is that, okay, if this is your personal machine, you've got your own full-time job, and this is your little machine at home, maybe I can understand.
Browsing the internet
on it. Maybe I understand you don't want to spend a load of money on a 2 terabyte iCloud, whatever. But if this is your day-to-day job and your main main business machine, I don't understand how anyone doesn't have, A, a backup policy in place, and B, the ability to replace, you know, the plan, because it's not just backup policy as in data, it's backup plan. You know, what happens today... Yeah. If my office burns down today, what do I do?
You're sure to hot swap devices. Basically.
Yeah, the end result is I'm not going to be very happy because I've got a bloody burnt out husk at the bottom of the garden, but I can be up and running again in a day and still working and earning money. And that should be the priority if you're a business, you know, if you're a freelancer or in business like that. So yeah, it just still amazes me that people don't have that sort of stuff in place.
iCloud is a perfect backup solution for most people. Like, I mean, I have... Yeah. Xcode projects, like in my documents folder, I have a folder called clients, and inside that I have archived ones and current ones, and inside the current one will be a folder for each client I have, complete with their Xcode project, any documents they've sent me that I might need, like any wireframes or legal contracts, all in one folder, and it's all just in documents and it's synced. So I know that, like, even when I'm working on projects, because Xcode changes a lot of files continuously if you're in storyboards and stuff, and just constantly syncs it. It's constantly doing it. I can go and switch over to my laptop and immediately see the changes reflected. So it's the perfect, because it's not a backup solution in terms of it goes up and then you have to manually bring it back down. It's constant syncing. I mean, Dropbox is much the same. I found that used a lot more CPU and
it does,
wasn't as efficient. Obviously, iCloud's built into the system. So if you're sharing files between all Macs, then it's fine. But for the price, it adds so much redundancy, and I have Backblaze as well because it's like $5, it costs nothing.
Exactly.
So I have that. I never use it anymore, really. I don't need it because, I mean, the chances are I'm never going to restore a file from it. I have it more just because then I have files backed up for a certain number of days.
Yeah.
And that is the more useful thing.
Exactly.
I used to love that about Dropbox. It had a feature called Packrat, which you paid an extra $3 for, and it basically kept every single copy of your file for up to 30 days, I think. That was perfect, because then if you did something stupid like and I've done this before, I've edited like a file in Xcode. I've deleted a load of code because I've like maybe cut it all, and then I'm going to paste a load more in and then save it. And then for some reason it's crashed after I've removed it all.
Yeah.
And now it's saved the file, and I open it and it's all gone and my clipboard's erased. It's like, oh no. Can't get that back. And you could just go in there and restore it, because obviously the problem with iCloud backup is that it's constantly going. The same with Backblaze. So you kind of lose. You can get the most recent version of a file, but most of my problems where I've needed a backup are because I've done something to the latest version of the file, and that has now been replaced on my backup.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the more... I mean, that's where Time Machine comes in handy as well, because Time Machine obviously has every revision of your file back to a certain number of days until it fills up the space, which is why you need a combination of all of these things.
Yeah.
Have a Time Machine backup on your desk so you can quickly go back to a specific file at a specific point in time.
Mm.
Have Backblaze so that if you bring in a fire, it's and have iCloud because it's the most convenient.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you're talking about, what, you're talking about a hard drive. Even if you buy an old, you know, a spinning drive, you can get, what, a couple of terabytes for 50 quid, something like that. You're talking about something like 6 quid a month, I think it is, or 5 quid a month for iCloud. And then with Backblaze, it's, what, a fiver a month. So, yeah, I mean, it's very... And again, it goes back to this freelance thing. It goes back to the business side of things. Yes, I understand if it's personal or whatever. But even if I wasn't doing all this for business, I mean, it wasn't all tax deductible and reclaimable and everything else, we still take, you know, all these photos, we take videos, especially when you've got family. And I've been in a situation years ago before iCloud backups, we had to back up, you know, our devices to iTunes, plug it into a machine and back up your iPhone or your iPad. And I definitely had, I think I remembered a couple of situations where I stupidly did an upgrade to an iOS version. I can't remember which one it was, but it sort of the upgrade process got bricked and I had to redo the iOS upgrade from scratch. And I hadn't done a backup beforehand and I lost some photos because there wasn't any syncing. There wasn't any tools out there. There wasn't iCloud photos. So I lost some photos that I'd taken recently, which was pretty devastating. So it's nice now that, to me, even personally, I would still pay for, you know, 2 terabytes of iCloud storage. I don't even know because I've got a big photo library, but all the photos I've ever taken on an iPhone. But yeah, it's just, you've got to have this stuff in place. You know, there's too many stories you see from people. I saw someone the other day said in one of the Slacks that I'm in, talking about they've got a real problem with their Mac, it won't boot, you know, how can I get files off it? And someone's doing the classic suggestion, which has worked in the past, of have you plugged it into a Linux machine? Because I remember having PC drives that were corrupt, couldn't be read by a PC, but if you plugged it into a Mac or a Linux machine, it could actually read files off it. And I sort of commented with, I hope you get it sorted. He managed to send it off to someone who can claim some company can get the data off. I said, I hope you get it sorted, but afterwards, please get a backup policy in place.
I've had that happen before. I had an old, it'd be one of the MacBooks with this, like, the white plastic.
Yes,
polycarbonate, whatever they used to call it. And that died on me. The had a spinning hard drive in it, and the spinning hard drive just died. And I had no backups or anything like that, because I think MobileMe had just come out. Actually, I think MobileMe came out the week after. So I didn't have any kind of online backup. And I didn't have a Time Machine. I'd just broken that somehow. I'd been tinkering with it and not fixed it. And of course, sod's law, as soon as you play with your backup devices, thinking, oh, it's all right, I don't have backups for a day, but I'll get this working again next week. That's when disaster strikes. And so I lost so many photos. And there were photos that I only had digitally because I was at university that I had, you know, Nokia phone that I took pictures in, and digital camera, hadn't had a physical camera for years, and so I lost maybe 5 years worth of photos.
Ow.
All from like my university days as well, and like school and stuff like that. I just lost everything, and I still have the hard drive because I checked with a few companies that said they could get the stuff off, and they're like, yeah, it'll be £900, and I was just like, no, because I just didn't have that money at the time. But I have the hard drive still, and I keep meaning to try and send it off to one of these services. You know, it will cost £900 to get the data off, but you only pay it if we actually get the data off, because it's probably worth it to me now, whereas at the time it just wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
But now I'd be like, yeah, I would do that. But now obviously we've got, you know, photos backed up to the cloud all the time.
Exactly.
I do think that Apple should increase the amount of deep storage. I do think
for the
world's largest company by profitability finances, like with the amount of money they have, they are not wanting space. I mean, I can say that very easily. I mean, you've got billions of devices, like even just giving everyone an extra gig is adding a ridiculous amount of storage. But not everyone will use it. But I do think that it is a little bit on the harsh side. There could be more because, you know, a single backup doesn't fit on there anymore. So it's kind of useless.
Yeah, what is there? I'm just looking up the What is
5 gigs is the standard, isn't it?
Yeah, that's bad. I mean, if
still,
you've got...
it's been 5 gigs for the last 3-4 years.
I mean, I'd imagine their most popular device is probably what, the 32-4 gig iPhone. They should probably at least give you 60. I would say.
Yeah, well, I suppose you don't need that much because you don't have the operating system, and you don't need to back up your apps. You only need to back up the data because you're not storing the apps in your backup.
Yeah, true.
Because
yeah,
they re-download them from the App Store. So actually, if you look at the size of your most recent backup, it's probably going to be about 7 gigs or something.
Yeah, 5 gigs.
It's not
going to
be
low.
The full.
Even sort of 20 gig, really 20 fit. Gig, maybe 15, 20.
20
gig
seems a reasonable compromise. Yeah.
Because it is something that is so... It's like, my mother-in-law dropped her phone. She smashed her... was saying, you know, how can I get it repaired? And we're like, okay, we need to a repair center. And what about my photos and things? And so I just did a quick check of the settings. And she's got backups and she's got... I think we've got her some iCloud storage. She's got backups and she's got her photos all in there. It's like, yeah, it's all taken care of. Don't worry about it.
Also, I mean, one of the cool things about iCloud, a fairly recent change, maybe a year or two ago, is if you use family sharing, which you probably should. I mean,
yeah, I do.
I do with my wife and works perfectly. It's great. It means that whenever she buys anything, it just gets charged to me, which she likes, obviously. You can share your iCloud storage space. So yeah. I bought like the 2 terabyte upgrade and that's shared between the two of us. So she never has to think about backups or space. We don't have to pay an upgrade for her to get 100 gigs and upgrade my however many terabytes of data. Just one price and with all of our stuff. So I know that all things are backed up perfectly as they should be. It's well worth doing if you don't do it already.
Yeah, exactly. I've done that with, I think I've got the kids, we're all in the same family, and I think I've got the kids' devices that they use within, I'm sharing with them, but I've left her with her own storage. And I think I'm using, to check, I think using about 300 or 400 gig, even with their, you know, with their devices on there as well, because Leo uses an iPad and does that he likes playing with, and in pretty high quality, and it's syncing all those up. So it is very good. I mean, it's just, I was talking earlier just about the old-fashioned backups to iTunes we had to upgrade your iPhone or something. And I remember having to clear the iMac that I've got down from old backups from like 3 years ago, because it's a 4 gig backup of an iPad. And because it was backing up everything, it would like almost do an image of the iPad. Whereas nowadays, well, later on, it wouldn't do the apps. It would just do the settings and then sync the apps. And now, you know, you can back up so easily. Although I do get this weird thing where I do have my iPads plugged in, you know, fairly regularly. There are times when I plug them into power. I've got one on my desk usually permanently plugged in that I watch, you know, Sky News or whatever on. Then I've got my other iPad, whether it's the 10-inch or 12-inch that I swap around, that I will plug into power to charge. But I'll fire it up sometimes and it'll do that thing where it says, this iPad hasn't been backed up in 3 weeks. And you're thinking, well, if you're connected to Wi-Fi and plugged in, you should be backing up. So I don't understand why that doesn't happen sometimes.
I think that's because... it's one of the security things. So if you've not, you know how like Touch ID gets disabled if you don't use it for 2 days?
Right.
I think your backups don't run because it knows you've not used it, so it knows nothing's changed on it.
So it doesn't need to.
But also all the files get encrypted.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Because I guess if
your
you
files haven't
used
only
it, yeah.
encrypt when you unlock it. So I'm completely speculating, but that is what I assume is the case, because I've seen that happen with my own iPad and I look at it and I think, well, it doesn't matter because
yeah it makes sense,
it knows I haven't done anything here. Nothing to back up.
Yeah, the only thing also, that's changed is notifications or stuff that have appeared, and that doesn't matter because you've got those on other devices, and any changes that would have synced have been synced from other devices. So that makes sense.
I wonder if that's also the case with PowerNap. Because I think I've seen this on my laptop as well, that if it gets to a point where I have to type in my password because it's been too long since I last used my fingerprint or unlock with Apple Watch, like I might not use my laptop for a week, and then I pick it up and it's like, no, you have to type password in. On those occasions, it doesn't look like PowerNap has run because my email is like what it was 5 days ago, and then it's like, oh, click, all syncs back in. So I think it makes sense to me that it would be anyway.
That makes sense. You know, if you haven't done it, need to back anything. It's a weird message because I guess it makes you panic a little bit because you're thinking, oh my God, it hasn't been backed up. Whereas if it sort of said, okay, you know, it hasn't been backed up because you haven't been using it or for some other reason, then you'd think, okay, that makes sense. It's a bit like...
It doesn't need to tell you, oh,
yeah,
this needs to be plugged in more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a message that doesn't need to be there. It's a message you need if you're using your phone every day but you're not charging it, which obviously is going to run out and die. So you have to at some point. It's a weird one. It doesn't...
I need to. I think I'm going to start putting segueing into iOS 12. I think I'm going to start putting that on some of the iPads now. I don't know if you've installed it, haven't you? The latest beta is really nice.
Yeah, it's fine.
Three was fine. I waited till three. I was tempted to do it at two, and I just thought, oh, I'm going to wait. I just want one more.
Yeah, I installed at three.
Yeah, three, pretty much people were saying, I think, was three the first public beta, I think? It might have been two. Okay, so that, at that point, I think, okay, if they're releasing it to the public, then I'll go for that. I won't do the public one, because the public one might be a couple of builds behind, but I'll do three and go for that. And three was fine, and four, I think the only issue I had with three was, I had no app crashes, no, all my usual apps worked fine. The only issue I had was sometimes in the camera, when I took a photo and then I wanted to edit the photo, you know, like you edit and hit the enhance button, that it would be very slow. It wasn't doing the iCloud download thing, it was just slow to sort of do that process and then kick out. Whereas, and that's been fixed in four. But yeah, I've had no, I mean, it feels, I mean, it's an iPhone 10, so it's going to be smooth anyway. It feels very smooth. I like it, so I'm probably going to stick that on the iPads. I've got an old iPad Mini that struggles. The last release iPad Mini that struggles a bit with iOS 11. So I'm hoping 12 is going to speed. But yeah, very happy. I still won't do Mojave because I was going to try it on the other laptop. So I was, before I wiped it, I was going to install it on the other laptop and do a test iTunes Connect or App Connect, whatever they call it now. Build and try and upload, and then try and do the hack that you can do to make sure it uploads. And I thought, I can't be arsed with all that, so I'm just going to leave that and not bother until we're only talking about what, 6 weeks away, 8 weeks away until the GM or the release
anyway.
Won't
be long.
So, and the only issue
I had with it was that the screen time thing didn't work. It worked for a couple of days. Even showed me some historical stuff, like it must have just pulled the battery usage stats for certain apps in order to calculate it, which was interesting. Right. But then it just stopped working and just said zero all the time. But now I've installed beta 4, it's all working again, but it hasn't showed any historical stuff. It's basically reset itself. And it's kind of weird that the average... So if you go into the screen time and look at it, and they'll go last 7 days, rather than giving me the average of the last 3 days, because that's the only time it's been running for, it's giving me the average numbers as if it's over the last 7 days, but 4 of the days it hasn't been used at all, so the numbers are all off by like a large factor. So it's like, oh, your average pickups per day are 27, whereas actually it's like 65 or 70 pickups a day, because that's the average of the last 3 days, but it's just done the average of the last 7 days, of which there were no pickups on 4 of them. So that's a bit weird, but apart from that, it's fine.
Isn't it? Yeah, there's a few weird things with screen time where if you go in, I find if you go... Yeah, if the first time I go into settings for a while and click on the screen time button, there's a lot of sort of screen jumps around as things get populated. When you go in, if you go back and go in again, it's much smoother. So if I come out now and go back in,
yeah, it's weird.
It's really smooth, but there's a bit. It's like they're using some sort of flex layout or something, and as it's populating the data, it sort of jumps and there's a noticeable jolt, which is a bit nasty. I'm sure they'll sort.
Yeah, there's animation there.
But yes, it's really...
But apart from
it's
that, it's
really,
fine. I've
really
had
nice.
No app crashes. I can't remember the last time I installed an iOS beta that didn't completely screw up everything. I mean, iOS betas used to be more like alphas. You'd open up apps and they'd just crash to desktop constantly. You'd be like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm not using that app for the next 4 months.
Yeah, I had one weird issue with beta 3, which was the Photos app would crash when you launched it. And it was one of these. It was really odd. So if you tap the Photos icon, it would launch and immediately crash, and then that was it. Every time, it would just crash quicker. But what was weird is if you then did "Hey Dingus, show me recent photos," or you had to do it, you had to get into Photos a different way. So if you just used, instead of using the app, you just said you couldn't say "Open Photos," but I said something like "Show me recent photos," and then the Photos app would come up in the recent photos mode. And at that point, it would be fine. And then I could exit and go in again, and it would be fine. So it's just little weird things like that. But yeah, there was a workaround. The biggest thing I was concerned about was, and that I'm always concerned about with betas, is that the apps don't bother me, certain apps like Skype and HSBC, because you can always do it another way. It's camera stuff. It's like, I want to make sure that I can take pictures.
Yes.
And I want to make sure my photos get saved, and they get saved to iCloud. That's always the biggest concern. As long as that works, and my syncing works, because there was that issue I had previously with builds, then I'm fine. You know, app stuff you can sort of work around. But the usual suspects are usually Skype, that always crash on startup or logging in, and HSBC apps because they're just shit and terrible hybrid apps. And they work fine. So, yeah, I installed it on a 7 just to test specific apps before I did it. And, yeah, it's one of the best betas I've ever installed. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it works fine. And literally everything that they said in the... Keynote is true. Like, apps load much quicker.
Yeah.
The activity view loads so much quicker, and like actions in Safari and stuff like that. It's really good. I wish I had access to the Shortcuts app. I think it's really weird the way that they're rolling that out, as like you have to request access to it via test flight, and then they'll send you a test flight invite at some point. I mean, I did that weeks ago and still not had an invite.
So did I.
It's a shame, because that's the thing that I'm most interested about in iOS 12 in terms of development and everything else. So it's kind of, I don't like it when there's an uneven playing field, in a sense, because I would like to build some shortcut stuff into my apps, and I can do it and I can test individual shortcuts. That's fine. That's built into the system. But I want to see it in a flow and see how it works with other shortcuts and how all that is going to gel together. And I can't do that because I've not been one of the chosen ones that gets an invite to that particular thing. It just seems really stupid. Why not just let everyone download it? It's either a beta or it's not.
Exactly.
It's a bit,
I mean, you can,
I don't like it.
It's weird because you can install the Workflow app and you get access to the Siri shortcuts to do certain things from Workflow, but I don't think you get all of the... They've added a load of new system features
in the Shortcuts app. Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff that's not in there.
But there's some really cool stuff that I've heard about where, you know, you can control low power mode, you can control, I think, volume level, you can do not disturb. You know, there's lots of cool system stuff they've done, and then you can link that to a Siri shortcut. So I think the podcast I was listening, they said something like, hey, Dingus, it's TV time or movie night or whatever, and it would put the phone on do not disturb. I think they were watching it on an iPad while they were eating. So it would put it on do not disturb. It would brighten the screen. It would make sure low power mode was off. You know, all these little things, which I thought was really cool, because I've always, from like the early days of the iPhone with the power management stuff, I've always wanted that option to have some sort of way, which they sort of did with low power mode, but it's not the best. I wanted that sort of option to for the phone to adapt itself based on battery level and what you were doing. So, you know, if the battery level is getting really low and all you're doing is listening to some music, then it could lower the screen brightness. It could go into a low power state and all this sort of thing, turn certain things off, Wi-Fi, or whatever, if the music's locally, things like that. And I quite like the idea that you can now say, you know, activate low power mode or activate, you know, super power mode or something. And it's just going to go to low power, put the brightness down, maybe turn off Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, or whatever, or even, you know, turn off the sort of data. Because data, when 3G, 4G data is always a massive killer. The chipsets are terrible on phones. But just sort of cool stuff like that that you could do. It would be really cool. I mean, I don't know if you could turn on airplane mode, but things like that would be really nice. So, yeah, I don't understand why they've done that either. Because, I mean, what's the testing limit on, I can't remember on test flight. Is it 1,000 or 10,000 users?
I think it's 10,000 now.
Okay.
They bumped it up to a ridiculous level. So it was 1,000, then it went to 2,000. Now I think it's 10,000.
So you've only got a 10,000...
Why do it through test flight?
Yeah, so you've only got a 10,000 snapshot. Yeah, you've got a 10,000 snapshot. Of all the people that could use it, you've got a maximum now of 10,000 people that can give you feedback, which just seems crazy to me. Like you say, they should have just rolled it out.
Super weird. Like, yeah, they can... Like, it could come pre-installed in the beta.
Yeah.
I get maybe they don't want to have it pre-installed when iOS 12 GM comes out. They want people to download it from the store for whatever reason. Like, I don't understand why podcasts, stocks, a load of other bollocks apps that I'm never going to use are pre-installed.
Yeah.
Some that still can't be deleted. But the Shortcuts app, which you're going to have to download, seems weird. That it should really... I was hoping when I installed Beta 4 that it would just be there. I guess maybe Beta 5 they might embed it in. I don't know. But I hope so, because it's something I really want to test. It's like the one thing in iOS 12 that I'm most excited about and just can't really do anything with at the moment, which is a shame.
I wonder if it's to do with the fact that you could have the Workflow app installed. I wonder, you know, is it going to use the same app ID? If you install it, does it replace the Workflow app, or does it work alongside, or does it say to you, uninstall
it? I guess it will probably replace it
when
iOS 12 comes out.
Because some of the podcasters talking about it have said, you know, when they installed Shortcuts, they went in and all their workflows were there. So it must be using either the same ID or some grouping or something to make, but maybe that's why it's not pre-installed. I don't know. It's a weird one. But like the Measure app isn't pre-installed. That's download from the App Store, which is weird because you sort of can see it in the App Store now, even if you're on iOS 11. But if you try and install it, obviously says no, you need iOS 12 to install this.
Was it not? It's in the App Store because you can delete it. That's why it's there. But it came pre-installed on mine.
Oh, okay, possibly. I mean, it wasn't...
In the same way that if you search Mail, Mail is in the App Store.
When I did Beta 3, it didn't install on Beta 3 for me when I did that on the 7, but that's
maybe
weird.
Maybe I did download it. I don't remember. I thought that it was there. I don't remember going to download it manually because I don't really care about it.
Yeah, I mean, they should... They, but they've never done... although those apps did shift to having, like, the, you know, the deletable apps did move to the App Store, like Mail, they've never done any updates, have they? It's never...
Okay, so there's an interesting thing about those.
Isn't it like a token?
It's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you delete Mail or Maps, it isn't deleting it. It's just hiding the icon.
What?
Delete the app because the app is built into them, so you don't reclaim any space. It just gets rid of the app icon.
Why has no one written about this? Why has no one written about this? Why aren't there posts? Why aren't there? Why aren't people distressed?
There were when it happened, Jason. It was fucking ages ago. Ages ago.
This is a disgrace.
When you go and download it again,
they're lying to us.
It's only there because Phil Schiller even said in the keynote when they announced, like, if you delete an app, where are you going to go to get it back? Like, we could have put it in the used to have with that night. App that came with the iPhone 3GS, but they decided in testing that the best place to put it was in the App Store, because you'll go there and go, oh yeah, re-download the Maps app. Yeah. So if you do it, if you delete the Maps app and then you go and re-download it, you'll see that it's instantaneous when you press that download button, because it's not installing anything, it's just putting the app icon back.
Exactly.
I mean, so that's why there's no updates or anything through the App Store for it, because it's not an app, it's a placeholder that just restores an app icon.
Well, I guess that's why you can't delete the App Store, because that would be even funnier. Yeah, dear Apple,
well, yeah.
I deleted the App Store. How do I get it back? Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I think I remember them talking about token stuff, but it's just funny. I'm just surprised there wasn't more outrage from people saying, oh, I deleted stocks, but now I find reading this article on so-and-so site that it's not really deleted. This is disgusting. And then there's a class action lawsuit.
Doesn't save anything.
But I mean, I'm installing it on an iPhone. I'm going to start upgrading. And my son is, I said, I think I'm going to stick. Does it run on a 5? I think it does. iOS 12?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I said, I'm going to install iOS 12 on yours because it will speed things up and then I can do screen time. And he's like, oh. now I can put limits on individual apps that he's playing. And he doesn't do social stuff, but, you know, certain apps. FIFA's what he's into at the moment. So I put a few limits on that. But I have noticed, I think I put a limit on myself for social to say like an hour a day. And it was coming up with it saying, you know, you've hit your limit. But for the last few days, it hasn't. So either I haven't been using it that much or it's gone a bit glitchy. But it's pretty cool. I like all the screen time stuff, especially for families.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be more useful for that, I would think. But yeah, it works well. I wish it showed you how many times you've installed app. Like, I find myself, I don't use Twitter much. Like in terms of time, because I don't follow many people, but I open it all the time. I'll open it, see if anything's new, and then get rid of it again. And I'd be interested to see how many times I open that a day, because I bet it's a frighteningly high number.
Probably.
But my actual usage is probably like 20 minutes, if that.
So yeah, that would probably be scary. I'm just looking. Okay, Twitter 15. Oh, it's today. Okay, last 7 days. Twitter, hour and 35 minutes. Facebook, 50 minutes.
Mine's 13 minutes in the last 3 days.
Setting 7 minutes. WhatsApp 3 minutes. Okay, yeah, it's pretty cool. Seem to have got games.
It's interesting how it shows you individual websites as well. So it's showing me as using like bbc.co.uk for Wikipedia.org for 1 minute, Kickstarter.com for 7 minutes.
Where's
just in the most used.
Oh, okay.
So just if you've used a certain website for a long period of time, that it's notable, then it puts it. In fact, if you keep clicking, show
oh yeah, I can see. Yeah. Google.co.uk. Yep. Okay.
22 seconds on RoyalMail.com.
Yeah, that is.
I need
nice.
To test it and see if it works with privacy mode in Safari, whether or not there's a bug and it shows all of your things on there.
Yeah, I spent. Can you imagine? I spent 11 seconds on the Daily Mail. Uh-oh.
Oh, filth.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I like that. It's going to be really cool with the kids, actually. I've been waiting for this for a long time, having the sort of granular support. You know, the ability to go into specific apps is really, really nice.
Much better than installing like an enterprise profile and doing that whole hack.
Well, that's what we did exactly. That's what we did before with this Hour Packed app, and it had a terrible. You know, you could disable. It's disabled third party content, so third party apps, your messages and stuff still worked. All photos and videos would disappear. But the worst thing about it is it had this horrible bug where if the because my kids are very weird with the way they arrange stuff. I mean, one of their iPads didn't have anything in the dock. It's like, what? Why are you not using the dock? Oh, because I know where the icon is. Well, okay, whatever. But if they did all this arranging around of folders and things, and then you did the hour packed thing to turn it off, then all the icons would disappear. If you then re-enabled it again, they'd all come back, but they'd come back just in a random order. It would throw away all your folders and everything. And so they had this terrible, terrible hack. And this terrible hack was to download an IPA from their website, which was called, oh, God knows, it was named after a magician, a magic trick or something, and it had a little magic hat icon. You downloaded this app, but the app never installed. It sort of went in that grey mode, you know, sort of, it just sort of said paused or installing or whatever. It never finished installing. You could never finish and actually run this app. And that was intentional because somehow what that did was cause the reorganizing of all the apps not to happen. So it was, I don't know how they discovered this, but somehow having this sort of part installed but not fully installed app prevented all the apps reordering when you re-enabled them. So everything would go back in the correct folders. It's just the most bizarre bug. And then I think Apple found out and screwed them and they couldn't do it because it disappeared from their website. But yeah, it's a terrible, terrible hack. And that's why we ended up using like the network circle stuff instead. So this is going to be really useful. Because what I like about this is what Windows did with Windows 10 on the tablets that we have is they give you really nice screen time breakdown. And you can see individual apps, you can see websites, you get a summary each week. And it's just a much, much nicer way of doing it. So yeah, it's really cool that they've done it. I think the only thing that they may have changed in Beta 4 was there was someone mentioned that if your spouse is in your family, you can see their screen time. And so now I think I saw an option the other day. If you scroll down in, I think it.
Yeah, that was in there last time.
Oh, was it?
But okay, my spouse doesn't use iOS 12 beta, so I've not seen it. But yeah, in there, there's a. It shows family option.
Okay, because I don't want
family. It just shows.
I don't want her setting limits. I don't want her looking at my things and saying, right, Twitter. He spent an hour and a half on Twitter. We're going to limit that to half. Yeah, that's not a good idea. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming now in terms of anything else that gets added to it. If they do any last minute stuff or. What this means in terms of new phones.
There'll be something at the release of the new phone, I'm sure.
Yeah, last minute thing that they have to do because if they don't, people are going to start hacking and discovering what's going on.
Yeah.
What about Sonos? Have you played with that? AirPlay 2?
I can't because none of my Sonos support it, which is fucking bullshit.
Straight.
I'm annoyed about it because I'm convinced but that they said it was coming to everything a while ago.
But why?
And then it changed to being just the Play 5 and the Play Base.
So that makes it sound like it's a hardware thing, but it doesn't seem like it should be a hardware thing. Unless
no,
it's.
Like,
yeah.
I don't get it because the Play Bar, as far as I'm aware, is the same as the Play Base. I thought that they came out at the same time and were the same hardware.
I thought they did,
one's
yeah.
One's a base, one's a bar. I don't know what the difference between the Sonos Play 5 and the Play 3 and the Play 1. But yeah, so literally I have a Play 3, two Play 1s and a Play Bar, and I can't use AirPlay 2 on any of them. So
that's frustrating.
I mean, to be honest, ever since the HomePod came along, I don't use my. I'm not really that fussed about it. I used to love the Sonos, but the HomePod is just so much better for my usage because I like to tell it what I want to listen to, and I don't use Spotify, so Alexa doesn't work for me. So yeah, I don't really use it. I put the Play 3 that we had in my wife's dressing room, listened to the radio, and she always listens to the same radio station, so she just uses the play pause button on top to play the radio. So she never has to use the Sonos app. I mean, she does occasionally if she wants to play something on it, but I never use the Sonos app. I think I did the other day when we were building a pram together and various other the nursery in the living room, and I was like, oh, we'll just put music on the Sonos, and I used the Sonos app for that. And it reminded me of why I hate using the Sonos. Because, ironically, if AirPlay 2 had come to my Playbase, my Playbar and my Sonos 3, I'd use the Sonos a lot more because I used Siri to do it. But I can't, so I have to use the Sonos app, so I don't.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it works in the sitting room now, so it's almost to the point where I could move the HomePod from the sitting room somewhere else because I can obviously just use the phone, and you can use it through Alexa, as you can use it through Lady Dachu Dingus, and I just say, you know, hey Dingus, play music on Sonos, and it starts playing. And because I've got the play bass and the two surrounds, you just get this quite full sound, which, to be fair, the HomePod by itself doesn't really emulate. It's a different sound from the HomePod, obviously, because it's one speaker or one device with multiple speakers. But what's interesting is you can group them. So you get this bizarre situation where I can say, play music in the sitting room, and then the Sonos kicks in and the HomePod kicks in, and it was literally like a nightclub. It was the most loudest thing I've ever heard in my life, and it was music sound coming from everywhere. It was just like you were in some night. But obviously the HomePod, if you put two HomePods in a room and stereo pair them, they communicate. You know, they work out how to do it. So the Sonos and the HomePod are not going to do that.
Yeah, they balance each other out.
The Sonos and the HomePod are not going to do that. They're just fighting for the same space. But it is funny because you just get this surround sound everywhere that you can't even locate where anything's coming from. You're just literally feels like you're in a nightclub. There's music surrounding you. It's really, really cool. I haven't used it since, to be fair. It's not something I kick in because if we listen to music in the sitting room, we wouldn't be listening to it at full blast like that anyway. So I'd probably just use the HomePod. But it is cool to have the control on the phone, so I don't have to go into the Sonos app to change the volume and stuff. That's quite nice. It was fairly straightforward upgrade. While we're on the Sonos, though, I mean, I just love... Since I changed my setup to Sonos, it has been amazing for TV, for gaming. Just everything sounds good. You know, the surround speakers are much better than the previous ones I had. I get no.
Oh yeah, it's just for a surround sound system. It is fantastic.
It is amazing.
I don't like the app, and I don't use it for music anymore.
Yeah,
but it's really, really great for that.
Yeah, and when you're watching, like I've got Virgin. I think you've got Virgin. Do you have Virgin Media for TV?
Yeah.
So when I've got Virgin on, and you stick stick a channel on, you realise you've got the SD channel, and you can hear it, and it sounds okay. And then you go, oh, let's switch to HD. And even though no one else in the room notices the visual difference, the audio difference suddenly kicks in and you get this much richer sound and louder sound and everything. It just really
One
really
of my
nice.
Favourite things, my wife totally can't, she doesn't notice the difference in sound definition. She doesn't notice the difference in sound either, though. So when we got the surround sound put in, we were watching The Big Bang Theory, and at the beginning, like the title, it has like the proton spinning around and then they like come towards you and it goes whoosh, and like goes behind your ears. And and they're going, oh, wow, I can actually hear it behind me now. Sounds great. And she's like, I don't hear anything. I'm like, no, when it whooshed past. And I was like, rewind, we'll do it again. She's like, it sounds the same to me. I was like, it's not the same. It's coming
come over here. Come over here and sit next to the speaker and listen for the whoosh.
No, just doesn't hear it at all.
Yeah, can we just get on with the show? No, I will not get on with the show until you acknowledge the fact that you hear that go from one speaker to another. It reminds me of the old 5.1 days, whenever you sort of, or 3.1 or even, or whatever it was, when, what was that THX intro that used to come on?
What?
Yeah, and it was like, oh my God, this sounds amazing. I can hear a TIE fighter behind me and all this sort of stuff. And oh my God. Or watching Jurassic Park at pretty much full volume and you can hear all the little animals everywhere. It's like, and now it's just, yeah. But those were the days when it was
The Matrix.
Cabling everywhere.
Because that's my stereo surround sound test, is always The Matrix. Because when you have the bullet time, it's like,
oh, I should watch that again. You. Yeah, okay.
You can get it in 4K on Blu-ray now.
I don't have a 4K TV yet, but yeah.
You need to sort that out, Jason.
I know.
If
I did, it would be one of those things where, right, we're going to watch this 4K and you're going to tell me that you notice the difference. I still can't notice the difference.
You will notice the difference on that.
Yeah, 4K would be nice.
Yeah. It's well worth the upgrade, especially for Netflix, if you watch a lot of Netflix, which I do. It's definitely worth it because a load of their stuff's in 4K now as well.
HD, I think, is pretty... What's funny, watching old rips that you've got from, like, SD, you know, DVDs and things, and you watch them back, and you're like, holy shit, how did we ever watch this? And it's even worse if you look up YouTube stuff from old TV shows. Like, I went through this mode a couple of weeks ago where I was looking up old TV shows on YouTube from the 80s, like WizKids and things like that. And it's like, and you sort of watch it and do it full screen, even on the iMac or on an iPad, and you're like, holy shit, this is terrible. You know, this is like broadcast quality 30 years ago, which, okay, it's 30 years ago, understandable. But I remember at the time you'd think, oh, this is great, we can watch. And it's just, yeah.
I think it's just because the monitors were big CRTs that were like all fuzzy anyway. So you didn't see the pixels because there's so much interference.
And if you watch old YouTubes where people have digitized the video tape they did from a TV show, and you get all the track lines and everything else and all of the terrible quality that you used to get on videotapes. It was just like, it's a different world now. I get more of an old man all the time where you sort of think, oh, my kids have got no idea what it was like when we grew up. And it's like that Monty Python sketch, you know. When we grew up, we had to watch SD on black and white TVs and turn a dial to change channels. And there were only three channels until Channel 4 came out. And then it didn't work for most of the day because they striked. You know, it's like, you don't know you're born.
Bit of degauss button.
Oh, God. Yeah, and my Amiga, I had to plug in via a normal aerial socket and then tune the TV into it to get the best signal, and it was
awful.
And the TV was
do it manually.
Yeah, and the TV was effectively, the screen was effectively a globe. It was so bloody curved, everything got distorted in the corners, and oh, yeah, amazing. But talking about
the good old days.
Talking about TV and graphics, that's probably a good segue. You mentioned in the notes about the Blackmagic.
Oh yeah, so alongside the new MacBook Pro, there is a eGPU, which is a Radeon Pro.
Looks very nice.
Graphics card with 8 gigs of, which is fine, but it's £600-700, and it can't be upgraded. So it's like a caddy. It's basically a graphics card that's been soldered into a caddy. So you can't, it seems good, but it's going to be useless shortly. I mean, that is an old graphics card anyway. I mean, that is from June last year.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, and even then, it wasn't that great compared to like the GTX 1080 from NVIDIA. Something like an NVIDIA GTX 1080 Ti is going to be way better. And obviously you're going to get probably an 1180 next month from NVIDIA, which is going to be way better again. So it's kind of an odd choice to be selling a soldered GPU rather than just having, here is a caddy and stick what you want in it.
Yeah.
Obviously you get a driver issue with other ones because you don't know what's what and what's not. I think NVIDIA are working on that stuff. I saw that there were NVIDIA drivers available for the 1080 at least, and a few other devices not long ago. So my advice is, if you're looking at those things, don't. Go and buy a caddy and just do it that way, because then at least you can upgrade your graphics card as time goes by. Whereas with this, you're stuck with a graphics card that's already a year old and wasn't great when it...
Yeah, I did...
A really, really weird device.
I did get one from Amazon. It wasn't a Blackmagic, but it was an eGPU. And I can't remember the name of it now, but it had some Radeon thing in. And... I thought it was just, you know, this typical Amazon Prime purchase, you know, give it a try, see what this stuff's all about. Plugged it into the old machine and it just didn't work. When you plugged it in, it came up with like an icon at the top, which was like the external GPU icon. But then when you clicked on that, it would say no external GPU installed. And just plugging anything into it didn't work. I tried different cables. I just guessed it was a faulty unit or something. So I just returned it. So... yeah, I like the idea of an eGPU, but to be honest, it would obviously just be sitting on my desk. I'm not going to be doing any game. If I'm doing any gaming here, I'm going to be using the Xbox X anyway. The Xbox One.
You're not going to do gaming. Like for the cost of that graphics card, you could buy a gaming PC, which would be better than it.
Exactly. So it's not something that I would use for anything. Yeah, it would just be a impulse thing and maybe a test out thing. But it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, like you say, I don't really understand why they've done it like that. It makes more sense for it to be a bit like those hard drive caddies that you can get, where you just sort of buy the raw component and then plug other hard drives and SSDs in. You know, because it doesn't matter what it looks like. You're probably going to stick it under your desk or out of the way. It doesn't have to be beautiful. And obviously this has been designed to have some sort of beauty aspect to it, so it looks nice on your desk, but it doesn't need to be.
It's annoying because like the device that it makes the most sense for is something like the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Because the Mac Pro has two very old graphics cards in it. And this would give it a decent power boost, and then you can have them in parallel and you're going to be working on a desk. But it's USB-C, so that rules out using it with the Mac Pro at the moment, because it has no USB-C ports on it, because it's 5 years old now. So it's designed for the MacBook Pros that just came out, but it's like, why would you want to use this with a laptop?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I get it, like, if you piecemeal this thing together. But it's exactly what I was saying earlier on about, why use a laptop unless, most people don't have a good reason for using a laptop. Like, unless you're one of these people that is constantly out in the field doing work. If you're a film producer who is editing video on the go, like on set, then yes, maybe this is suitable for you. You want a powerful laptop and you want an extra bit of power with you and you can just plug it in. But for most people, this is completely pointless.
Yeah.
Like going, oh, well, I've bought this MacBook Pro and it's got desktop RAM in it, and now I'm going to plug in this desktop graphics card next to it so it's really powerful. It's like, just buy a fucking desktop. You could buy a desktop and a 12-inch MacBook for the price of these two things.
Yeah.
You could buy an iMac and a MacBook Pro for the cost of all of this, and you would have all the power you need on your desk, and you'd have, you know, as you go out and about. It's crazy.
And if you really
don't understand it.
And if you really wanted to do it, like you say, if you look on Amazon, I've just found something... Ikatio Node Thunderbolt 3 eGPU caddy. It's £300, which is quite expensive. There's probably cheaper ones. But it's basically got a slot in there. It's got all the power and everything ready, and the Thunderbolt is all, you know, set up with a cable and stuff, and it's just got one PCI slot. So you can stick a card, you know, whatever card you want in there. That makes more sense. Yeah. Which is going to be a lot cheaper if you really wanted to do it. I mean, the only thing about the eGPU stuff that I thought was really impressive was and like you say, with that sort of IMAX and stuff, that makes sense, is how all the graphics cards work together. And that demo they did...
just scale.
Yeah, across. That demo they did at WDC, where they sort of showed the different screen components of what the internal graphics card was doing. And then they had, you know, if you plug two GPUs, which part of the screen they... That's clever stuff.
And it was pretty much doubling the power. It wasn't... Like, if you use SLI in a PC, which basically lets you put two graphics cards in and uses them both, in certain scenarios, you get a decent, like, virtual reality, because one graphics card can do each eye.
Right.
But in most situations, like, the boost is, like, 1.5 times, maybe. And that's if the game supports it. Like, it has to have specific support for that technology, which a lot don't. So, in reality, you get maybe a 20% boost, which isn't great when you've plugged in, like, a £100 graphics card. And it's like, 20% boost to graphics. Like, okay. But with this, it is genuinely, you plug in a second graphics card, you've got twice the cheaper.
Yeah.
It's really, really well done, both on the software. So it is impressive, but there are very, very people who are going to find it useful for very specific applications. Yeah. So things like if you're designing virtual reality games, why you would want to do that on a Mac, I don't know. You'd want a PC because it's got much better hardware.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is a reasonable place to use it. Or if you're doing some sort of crazy editing, like you're doing 4K, 8K rendering, then yes, maybe if you've got the money for it, because maybe your rendering time is costing you more than the outlay is, then sure, buy four of these GPUs, slap them all together. It will be faster. It's not the best thing you could do, but it will be better. But for most people looking at it, it's just completely unnecessary. Like, you'd be better off just buying an iMac than buying a laptop with this.
Exactly. I mean, I love...
Unless you have a very specific reason that you need a ridiculously powerful GPU and desktop RAM in a portable device, which most people do not, I would contend. People will argue with me and say, well, I need it because I use Xcode and I use Slack and I use... Well,
Slack needs 16 gig, yeah.
Slack does. That's your first problem. Don't use Slack.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the concept of eGPU with actually switching from Apple is... and whether this will be possible or not, in whether it's the current version or a later version, is with the Switch. Because I thought it would be a lovely idea if you could have
See, that would be good.
Yeah, if you had a dock, which I thought, I just wondered if that was ever a plan.
It doesn't have a
dock. No, but if that was ever a plan of Nintendo at some point to say, here's the sort of eGPU dock. So it's a, you know, similar sort of dock, maybe bigger, whatever it would need to be. But basically, you plug a Switch into it, and suddenly you get 60 FPS, you know, 4K gaming.
That was exactly what I thought when they announced it.
That would be lovely.
Why the hell is this dock £90?
Yeah.
Like, what? I mean, it's just a bit of plastic with a PC port in it.
Yeah.
And looking at it, it looked like there might be a way to slot something in there.
That would be amazing.
And, I mean, historically, I mean, Nintendo don't really care about graphics. They're all about the gameplay, which is fair enough. I mean, the Switch is a great console, even though it is only 1080p when docked. I mean, there are some games, like Mario Odyssey, is 60 FPS and 1080p. And it's like, okay, well, that's great, because it's so cartoony.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of games on the Xbox One and the PS4 that are not 1080p, but that's because they're more realistic-style graphics. But, like, Nintendo don't really care about graphics, but then there were times in the past when do weird stuff like that. 64, you could plug in, like, this little pack into the front of it, which gave it more RAM for textures. And then... games like Majora's Mask would have much better texture, which is like a weird, like, I could totally see something like that happening again, where you plug something in and you get, you know, 4K gaming would be the dream. Whether or not it's actually going to happen, I am due, because they're doing so much stuff, that there's so many games launched now, I think it would be very, very difficult for them to go, oh yeah, we're adding 4K gaming to this console. Because also, they don't need to. They're selling them constantly.
No, exactly.
They don't need to do that. I would love it if they did, but just because I want them to doesn't mean they are going to.
No.
And, so I think they could if they wanted to, but I don't think they want to, because they don't need to.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to sell enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different type of... for the games I've played on it anyway, they're perfectly fine. Even on, when you plug them into the TV, like you say, it's like Mario Kart stuff. There's a game called Paladins that I played around with, 60 frames per second. Fortnite runs at about 30 and it's too bad. It's perfectly playable. Yeah, it's a perfectly playable machine for what it is. And it's quite impressive what it's doing when you think about, you know, in the days I've still got a PSP in my desk somewhere, first or second generation PSP, and that was impressive at the time. But this is, it's a very, very nice device, and I love the fact that you you know, just plug it into the dock and have four Joy-Cons and the kids can sit there and put the Joy-Con sideways and use them like controllers and play Mario Kart. It's, yeah, it's very, very pleased with that. Nintendo Switch. What else have we got? HomeKit. HomeKit removes doorbells, you said.
Yeah, so it's just a very minor thing, but could be indicative of a large change, which is the Apple website, where it lists all the various HomeKit devices and manufacturers that make them, completely removed the doorbell.
How weird.
Section. There was only one in there, I think it was an August one, which has been there since the beginning. And so it's just, and obviously Ring have long promised HomeKit integration. So whether this is a clue that Apple are just going to drop it, which seems weird, I don't think they're going to, or whether it's just that that particular August one isn't happening anymore and so they decided to remove it until it's actually ready. It seems like they're definitely having problems with the Ring, with the doorbell support, because otherwise we'd see doorbells using it by now. It seems like the problem is at Apple's end rather than anyone else's, based on this at least.
And it would make sense to remove it if you've got nothing in there. So exactly. And Ring have been bought by Amazon now. Whether they're going to have any priority to get HomeKit,
we talked about this last time. They have publicly said since then that they still are wanting to do it and going to do it.
Yeah.
And to be fair, they were selling them with the word HomeKit on their website when I bought mine, at least, because that's why I chose them. So I think legally they kind of have to, because otherwise they're going to get hit with a class action at some point, because it's false advertising. They said it would have HomeKit at some point. So I think they have to do that. And they seem to want to. And whenever they mention it, there's always people asking about it. So it's a very popular request from the community as well. So I guess we'll see if they end up doing that or not.
Yeah, and I think Homebridge, I did read stuff about Homebridge, could support Ring devices, but you had to add them as two different types of device. One was as a camera. I'm pretty sure there was something about it. But it was very flaky, the instructions, and I never sort of got round to trying to work out how the hell it worked.
It doesn't really work terribly well.
No.
But, so I don't know if it means anything or if it's nothing at all or whether it's just an accident. Who knows? But, weird.
I need to check out, I need to see if modules available for my... And if that can come out, then I open and close the office. Because the Z-Wave technology with this Vera app and this Vera device that I use, which is like the little hub, won't actually let you use... You can use the app to unlock the office door and lock the office, but it won't let you use Amazon's to do it for some security... I guess for security reasons. They won't allow it to be done by voice. So I'm hoping HomeKit will let that happen.
You don't want someone outside your house shouting, hey, that's what will happen.
Yeah, you go on Twitter, gay. Oh, awesome. I've got my office now working with Dingus, and I can just say, Dingus, unlock office, and it works. someone knows.
I mean, that is the problem with them. Yeah, like, if you shout to a HomePod through a window, it'll unlock the doors.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It doesn't know.
Needs to recognize voices.
Well, exactly. I mean, it is problematic.
I love that.
I'd be interested if anyone does have HomeKit locks that, if you could lock your door but leave a window open and just shout through the window, hey, whatever, unlock the door, whether it works.
Maybe it would be like, that would be terrible. Maybe it would be like some sort of, I know with the ordering, you know, the voice ordering on the Echo, you can say, Echo order toilet rolls or whatever, and it will say, please enter your purchase code or something, and I have to give it a four-digit PIN. Maybe it'll be something like that. I don't know. Because that sounds terrible. I just love that idea. You got the window open to let some air in and someone just like, watch this. We're going to break into this house. Hey, Dingus, open the front door. Zip. Done. Wow. Yeah.
Or just, I mean, you wouldn't even notice to know what the name of the door was. You just say, unlock all doors.
Yes.
Because that'll work.
Holy shit.
And there are problems.
Turn off burglar alarm. Open door.
Actually, I think I know how they do support it. I think it's one of those commands that you have to pin code in the phone.
That
only works if the phone's unlocked. Actually, it might be the way that works.
Okay.
I'm sure that this has been thought of. I mean, obviously, Apple aren't going to release something. I'm pretty sure it's one of those things that... I don't have any, so I can't test it. But if you try and unlock it, it'll be recycling.
It always reminds me of the video you see of, you know, when the Xbox came out with what was it? The bloody hologram 3D thing on it.
The Kinect.
The Kinect. And did the voice.
They had those adverts with Aaron Ball. Well,
but it had the
turn off Xbox.
Yeah, and there was a YouTube video that someone did where they changed their handle. They changed their screen name to Xbox Turn Off, Xbox Switch Off. I think it was Xbox Turn Off, whatever the command is. And then this guy played Call of Duty and would be like a real annoying teammate or a camper or whatever, and do something, and then, or like, you know, in hardcore mode, kill his teammates or something. And then someone will go, oh, you asshole, you know, Xbox Turn Off. And then they go, no. And then, because suddenly their Xbox had listened and started to go to, you know, go through that shutdown of, I've never used it, but I'm sure it's something like, you know, are you sure you want to turn off or something? And they're like, oh, shit, I'm in the middle of a game. And there's a YouTube video you can find where this guy does it. And you just see all these people freaking out because their Xbox. And then, you know, one of them's like, oh, it's this guy. Don't say his name, but it's he's got a, you know, weird name. And yeah. Or it reminded me of the days where people used to say about the keyboardless or voice-controlled machines in offices, and how I always thought that was just the worst idea ever, because you could literally just, you know, troll people by walking past them and say, you know, computer, shut down, or computer, delete, or whatever, and then, you know, mess up people's work and stuff. What else we've got? One last...
I think what you need is the Samsung device.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's the one that connects via Z-Wave that works with the Yale locks, but then there's also a Homebridge plugin for it, so then you can enable it with Siri.
Oh, okay.
Because I looked at getting the Yale locks for... Because my back door lock is a bit wobbly, the handle's a bit rubbish, and so I looked at replacing it with one of those, and I was like, okay, well, that'll be like £180 to get the new Yale thing. And I was like, ah, it's £150 for the SmartWave hub to control it with Siri. I was like, not sure I want to spend £320 on my door lock, but I am very, very tempted a lot of the time to do it, because I do like the idea of just being able to lock the doors with Siri. I'm pretty sure it's the Smart Hub, Samsung Smart Hub, I think it's called, or Smart Things, I think.
Okay. That looks cool.
Have a look at that. That'll sort you out, I think. Yeah, we should probably wrap up shortly. So, there anything else you wanted to discuss today?
No, not me. I think you just had something on Lego stuff.
I saw that there was a Lego Aston Martin that's coming out next month. It's coming soon, but it's a
oh wow!
So it's the original James Bond Aston Martin from Goldfinger. It's a creator set. I think it's about £140, £150, something like
that. That's pretty good.
I forget how many pieces it is, but it has a working ejector seat.
No way.
Missiles. So looks pretty good. I've not bought any Lego since Disney World Castle, which was back in 2015. This might make me buy some Lego.
That's pretty cool. There's a little video on the TechCrunch site that shows. That's very cute. Because I think they've done a...
I'm going to get that.
There's a creator set for, is it Voltron?
There is,
which looks pretty awesome as well, where all the different arms and legs turn into different creatures and then bolt together to create the big robot. I was never into Vault. I know of
no.
it. It's quite cool. There's some good stuff coming from creators. It's always interesting looking at if you look at the original idea. What I like doing is you go to the original idea on the idea site, look at the original images, and then look at what the new set looks like, because obviously they make certain changes to do with whether it's bricks or, you know, getting to a certain price point or strengthening it somehow or whatever. And it's just interesting seeing the subtle differences that you get. Some of them are very close, but some...
This isn't a Lego idea set, though, is it? It's just a...
Voltron, I think it is.
Voltron is, sorry. I was talking about the James Bond one. Bond one's not. It's just a creator set.
Oh, creator. Sorry, I was... Yeah, okay, creator's just...
Lego Ideas is the one that's...
Gotcha, yeah.
Which I always think have been a bit... Like, when it started, I was really excited about it, and... None of them have particularly grabbed me.
Yeah, I liked, well, the Wally was good, but obviously it had that little fault that they had showing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do have that. Yeah,
yeah, that's not... and the Voltron one is very good. If you look at the original and then look at the final set, it does look pretty good, what they've done.
I did like the fisherman's hut, which I liked just because it looked like a classic Lego set and had really nice tiling to make the top look like a bit decrepit and falling apart. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
And I did get the Saturn V rocket, or a couple of Saturn Vs. I haven't done anything with them yet, but I've still got that damn Millennium Falcon I need to build. They've started selling that again now.
Oh, yeah.
That's back available again.
Oh, don't tell me that. No.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's in stock. Yeah,
let me see. That a legitimate business expense? Do you think HMRC will write that off?
It's a office decor, yeah.
If I only build it and keep it in the office, it's
office decor. Exactly. 649 available. Yep, 649 available now. 649.90.
So, that's actually cheaper than I thought it was. So, okay.
Yeah, no, I think that's the original. Good, that's right. the original price. I think it's just a shock. It's a shame for these people that sort of bought the They buy the one. I mean, I obviously bought two.
I thought it was a grand for some reason.
Yeah, no, I bought one to store and one to build. That was always my intention. But obviously, the prices for the original set were like two or three, well, even more, $6,000 on eBay. And so that market's been hit a little bit. And then, of course, the people who got the first batch of these ones, the price went up to sort of about $1,500, $2,000, I think was the highest one I saw, to get it fully boxed in the brown box and everything unopened. And of course, now it's available again. It's going to impact them again until such a time that they stop making them again. But I think they'll sort of just keep making them.
Now I've gone to the Lego website. I can see that the Aston Martin came out yesterday VIP members. So it's available now. And then everyone else would get it from, I guess, the 1st of August is what they usually do. But it does look nice. It's even got rotating number plates.
I'm not logged in.
1,295 pieces, which is actually fits in perfectly because it's £129 in the UK. So it's literally 10 bricks. Cool.
Pretty good.
Yeah, 10 beer brick, which is what I usually think is pretty decent. That's the amount I tend to. It looks nice.
Yeah, revolving number plates.
Doesn't have a minifigure, which is interesting.
It's too big.
You'd expect it to come. Well, you'd expect it to have like one of those plaques.
Oh, yeah.
Usually for these sort of things, they have a little plaque that you put one on. Like, it seems weird that they've got a James Bond. It's even branded James Bond car, but it doesn't have a... I guess maybe they're trying to avoid people buying a shit ton of them. If they did that, it'd probably be very popular. People buy it, sell the minifigure on it.
Oh, the Taj Mahal's for selling. Nice, though. I thought the Taj Mahal as well. That's
good. Yeah, they re-released that a while ago. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, on that happy note, we'll leave it there.
Yep. I'll speak to you next time.